We're doing Rav Chalap and Barshat Vayetze, and our subject is the dream is a prophecy for the exile. B'Parshat Vayetze and Parshiot Ptuchot V'Stumot. When you will look at Parshas Vayetze in the Sefer Torah, there's something unusual. The whole Parsha is like one long paragraph. Ordinarily, we have breaks. You have an ending before the end of the line. You have a gap of an open space, what's called a Parshat Ptucha, Stuma. No, in Parshas Vayetze, it's one long block. V'chol ha-parsha yoral Yisrael is man ha-galut. So the Parsha is it's a teaching for Israel about the period of exile. Reshit ma shetiken Yaakov ya chalom emet. The first thing that Yaakov institutes is the idea that the dream is true. Liot v'Yisrael enam yecholim bli giluim elokim. Because Israel can only exist with heavenly revelation. The idea that the prophets keep giving us hope and they keep telling us there's a better future waiting. We say when a person passes away, the first thing they're going to ask him is, Tzipita li Yeshua? Were you anticipating the salvation? Were you anticipating that the words of the prophets will come true in your days? That's part of the existence of Israel. The idea that we're always waiting, it shocks me how for generations Jews could keep saying, V'techezena einenu b'shuvicha l'tzion b'rachamim. I understand the desire of the Reform movement to take out that from prayer. I can understand that a person would give up hope. It's wrong. I can understand that weakness. That doesn't make it right. But the idea that we wait, we constantly were waiting, hoping, when will I see it? So that, says Rav Chala, point number one, what we learn from Yaakov Avinu is on his way out to exile, he dreams. On his way out, he's thinking of the future. And that vision to the future is what held Israel throughout their exile. Uvizman shemistalekit mehem ofayi enlem klum. And if you don't have that, you got nothing. If you're not hoping for that future, if you're not working with a vision of where you're headed, you don't have anything. Uviyot she'en nevuat zulat be'etz Yisrael, and being that prophecy is only in the land of Israel, da'ag Yaakov legilot ha'ofa nevuit gam begalut al yidei chalom. That's why Yaakov has to dream on his way out to exile, because he can no longer have prophecy. When you're going to leave Israel, you won't have prophecy, but you'll be able to dream. But even dreams, if they're going to be godly dreams, then in some way they're going to come out through Israel. When a person is in exile, he's in a place where the air is defiled, the land is defiled. So how's light going to penetrate all that? Well, it's got to be a very strong light in order to penetrate all that. That's a light that can only come out through Israel. So even a dream that's going to be a godly dream in some way is going to be connected to Israel, because that's the only way it's going to penetrate into Chutz La'aretz. Kipel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kol Eretz Yisrael Tachtav. Rashi quotes the Medrash that when Yaakov was lying down and he has the dream, Hashem tells him, the land you're lying on, I'm going to give you and your descendants. All the land was folded under him. Rashi explains, this was an illusion. He was teaching him that it's going to be so easy to conquer. Your children will do it so easily. When it comes to Israel, there's a concept of wholeness. In order for Israel to have its holiness, all of the land of Israel must be owned by Am Yisrael. And if something's missing, then it cannot have the holiness that its potential yearns for. In order to express that holiness, it all has to be within the control, within the ownership of Am Yisrael. Because Israel, really, there's no room for partnership here. The essence of the land of Israel is that all of this land is for the people of Israel. And being that Israel, the land represents truth and its traits represent truth and nothing's missing, well, that can only come to fruition when the people have the land of Israel. And that's what Hashem is telling him. It's all folded under you. You want to see that vision of greatness of the latter? That's when all of Israel is under you. So then it's easy for his children to conquer it. There's no other way. They have to desire conquering all of it. And there's a general human weakness. I heard a mind-boggling statistic. I know of a university here in Israel where most of the people don't finish their doctorates. So I thought that that university is too tough on its students. And then this week I heard the statistic that most people don't finish their dissertation. Most people don't conclude their doctorates. Of all the people that start a doctorate, over 50% do not conclude. That means there's a general human weakness not to do the final 5 or 15% of a task, even though I've done 85% or 95%. But that final 5% get in our way. That's a general weakness. When it comes to the land of Israel, there's a specific weakness. We find that Am Yisrael, from the days of Yoshua bin Nun, had a weakness to say, I got most of it, I got enough of it, let me let the nations live in peace within me. And Hashem repeatedly warns us, don't do that. But we have this weakness to do that. And we've done it over and over again.
And it's not easy. You're comfortable where you are and it's not just rolling over.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying there's the general weakness we have to be aware of. There's the specific weakness. But you know what? That light that we're talking about that reveals itself in dreams, even in Chutz Laretz, that's when all you're connected to all of Eretz Yisrael.
Chazon
ha-chalom
ba'al yedei ha-shina.
Can you repeat that last? That light which he began with, that Yaakov can have dreams in Chutz Laretz that will give him vision, that can only come from a light of Israel, but that comes when you're connected to all of the land of Israel.
What does that do with
Chutz Laretz? He said that when you're in Chutz Laretz, then there's a light that can come through dreams. You can't have prophecy in Chutz Laretz, but you can have visions of dreams. That vision of dreams, he said, it has to be a strong light to penetrate the darkness of the air of Chutz Laretz and the land of Chutz Laretz. So now he's saying, and he said, that light can only come from Eretz Yisrael. Well, that light can only come when you're connected to all of Eretz Yisrael.
So is there any indication that when you're in Chutz Laretz, the concept of all of Eretz Yisrael is more attainable just by virtue of being separate from it?
So nope, he's okay. Not saying that. He's not saying that. He's saying when you can connect to all of Eretz Yisrael, that's when Eretz Yisrael's light can penetrate even Chutz Laretz. He didn't explain, I don't want to explain. Let's leave it. He didn't define it at this point.
To define what it is or what is the full borders or how do you connect to it?
How do you connect to it? He didn't. Chazon ha-chalom ba'al yedei ha-shina. That vision of a dream comes through sleep. Our sages say, he already reached Chutz Laretz and suddenly Mount Moriah comes to him. So the Medrash says, yeah, Har Moriah came out to greet him. Whatever that means, we discussed it on Monday. Har Moriah is tamtzit shel Eretz Yisrael. The essence of Israel, we view the world as a build-up. The whole world builds up to the land of Israel. The whole land of Israel builds up to Har Moriah. So the essence of the land of Israel is Har Moriah. Shekula meira be'ar hakodesh al hazeh, u'mimenu yavo achezyonot hachalomim. All of the light of Israel is expressed on Har Moriah, and from there, from Har Moriah, that's where the light of visions come from. Hashena she'echad mishishim b'mita, our sages tell us that sleep is 1/60th of death. Ba'yofi adar hakodesh al hachazon ha'elyon, that's where the holiness of the vision of above can reveal itself in sleep. Tamtzit eretz hanevuah dehinei shnei kiyumim yesh la'olam. Kiyum echad bederech kiyum shel limud haTorah. The world exists in two manners. There's the existence of the world through the learning of Torah. As our sages say from the verse in Jeremiah, Im lo vriti yomam v'layla chukot shamayim v'aretz lo samti. If not for my covenant of learning Torah day and night, I wouldn't have created this system of a world. V'akiyum ha-sheni, if not for my covenant of learning Torah day and night. Torah is one key to keeping the world existent. Ha-kiyum ha-sheni, the second aspect of keeping the world existent, is b'tzurat bitul. The idea of bitul, I'll explain in a second. There is a secret. There is a secret concept. A dangerous concept. but a concept nonetheless, which is in the very beginning of Shas, and that is the idea of Eid La'asot L'Hashem Eferu Torah. There are times where the only way Torah will exist is if you're willing to transgress something in Torah. Let's take an example. Rebbe knows that you're not allowed to write down the oral law. You're not allowed to. The Torah says the oral law must remain oral. And Rebbe sees that there's Roman persecution. And Rebbe sees that there's more and more machlokas. And it's more difficult to gather people to learn Torah. And Rebbe sees that the future holds for us a future of being scattered, of diaspora, of diminished yeshivot, of greater persecution. So Rebbe does what no one else before him did. Rebbe publicizes a public copy of the six orders of Mishnah, Shisha Sidrei Mishnah. Something that was never done before. It was never limited to six orders. It was never written down in one version. So Rebbe does that. Our sages say, how did he do that? He said, Eit la'asot l'Hashem. There's a time where you must do in God's name, Heferu Torah, because otherwise the whole Torah will be undone. There's a time where you have no choice. You got to know that you better trample on one thing in order to save everything else. It's like pikuach nefesh. Now, that's a very dangerous concept. A person says, I'm only transgressing this Shabbos because, you know, I can't handle it this Shabbos. There might be instances where it's true. The halacha says a person can be attacked with depression where we tell them, turn on a light, do whatever you have to do. You have to get out of your depression. There is such a concept. It says in the Mishnah, there are times we'll turn on a light for a depressed person because otherwise he's gonna lose it all. Now that's true, but you realize that's a dangerous concept. Misapplied, you can use that as an excuse to destroy everything. I just need this now. Who said you need it now? Come on, that's a cop-out. But there are times. Says Rav Chalap, these are both the existence. These both ensure the existence. The knowledge of applying the Torah, that keeps the world running. But the knowledge of when I have to understand that I have to transgress this, otherwise nothing will last. Says Rav Chalap, if not for the forbidden fruit, then this concept would never exist. There should never really be a need to transgress the Torah. He says, right, but we messed up with eating the forbidden fruit. He says, what we did is we created a world where things are lacking, where things are imperfect. In an imperfect world, sometimes part of what's doing right is being able to say, this time I gotta transgress this. If I'm not going to drive the ambulance on Shabbos, the person's going to die. Why do I have to drive an ambulance on Shabbos? If the Torah is a perfect Torah, you know, that's a mistake. That who are those people who never use medication, they never use modern science?
Teaches that you should only rely on Hashem as a cure. I don't know enough about it. There probably other branches of people who don't use any.
The concept in its essence comes from you say Hashem gave me a Torah. It should fit every circumstance. Why do I need anything else? Says Rav Chalap. Yeah, you do need something else. You live in a world that's not perfect. The Torah is perfect, but we're not perfect. The Torah is perfect, and the world is a world where sometimes you can have to drive an ambulance on Shabbos. And you say, this is what I got to do this time, otherwise the person's going to die. But wait, if I believe in Torah and I believe in their bones, I'm not doing everything the way Hashem said, why do I have to do this? Because ever since the forbidden fruit, the world's just not perfect.
But what does the forbidden fruit specifically as the forbidden fruit have to do with that? Meaning, if a world was created, you know, like from nothing, then that creation in and of itself is limited from mechatzila. Before the forbidden fruit, it's already imperfect because it's been taken from the source of perfection and limited to finite borders. So what is the
finite
fruit?
Doesn't mean imperfect.
No.
Just because it has a limit that makes it imperfect? Why is that imperfect? Because but a world where I have contradictions.
Is perfection not, you know, like a parabola, just like ultimate ascent, so to speak, without limit?
I don't know.
Once you take the fruit,
I'm saying that makes it more imperfect, that introduces new, that breaks it more, maybe.
So our sages really say something in line with what you're saying, to whatever degree I understand it. They say that if not for the forbidden fruit, then the spiritual part of the human being would have overpowered the physical, and he would not have had a limit. Man would not have been finite, man would not have had to die. What happened when they ate the forbidden fruit is that the physical part of life took on a greater force. And the forbidden fruit was actually a healthy fruit, but it made the physical part of the human being far more potent than the spiritual part, which also means the human being is limited.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, I think, unless I don't understand one. I mean, once the fruit was taken, you forgot that you were created. You thought you were in a lucky club. It just got here, you, right? They had one rule that, I think, one commandment. And once the godly part of you is not connected, either you make a new kind of world or you have a not perfect world. Hashem could have destroyed, I guess, everything, but he didn't then.
Well, we also believe that the whole idea of the forbidden fruit was part of God's plan. For whatever reason, Hashem wanted us to understand that it began this way. It has potential for getting to be this way. But we Hashem wanted, it was part of the plan.
Right, we're always falling and trying to get back, whether it's the Mikdash, whether it's at Sinai, whether it's at Yam Suf with prophecy. And when we build it ourselves to get back, it means more than when it's given as a gift.
Okay.
The casualty rate is horrific. The veil of tears on the way, which is tough. But that seems to be the plan, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. No, we don't. I'm saying at the end of the day, we don't have perfect answers. We don't understand it with perfection, but we get what we can. Now, with this understanding, with this purpose, we understand that Yaakov and Esav were twins. Yaakov is a man of wholeness who dwells in tents. Esav is the man of the field. He knows how to hunt. Yaakov's job was to attain that wholeness that existed before the sin. Our sages say that when Yaakov was learning, he didn't stop. He never went to bed. He might have fallen asleep on his desk, but he never stopped. He never wasted a moment. That's what the Talmud in Tractate Chulin says, that when he went to sleep on his journey to Haran, the angels got upset. What's he wasting time for? Guys, he spent 14 years without a break. So now he took a nap. No. What's going on here? You left yeshiva, now you sleep? What do you say? You don't need that sleep. You didn't need it before, you don't need it now. So Rav Chalap is touching on that idea that when he was in yeshiva, he worked for 14 years straight, meaning without any unnecessary pause. This idea that in this world you also need to do other things. You can't just learn Torah all day. That's an idea that stems from eating the forbidden fruit. Well, that was supposed to be Esav's job. There was supposed to be a partnership here. Our sages say, what does it mean he knows how to hunt? When you hunt, you're grabbing things that are out in the wild and you're taking them into your possession. Our sages say that's an allusion to the great, wonderful forces that were hidden within Esav. There's a Rabbi Akiva that's going to come out of Esav. There's a Rabbi Meir. The giants of the oral law come from Esav. And we discussed this in the earlier pieces of Rav Chalap. Aval Esav mitov rishato ratza laros hakol. Esav, on the other hand, was wicked. And he wanted to destroy everything. He had no interest in any piety stemming out of him. That was something that was antithetical to his philosophy. Esav thinks that the exception is the rule. If we say, when we have to, we'll go to war. When we have to, we stop learning. When we have to, we go and deal with hunting or whatever we need to do. Esav takes that exception and makes it the rule. Esav's life is about being the hunter. Instead of saying it's a partnership and I'm going to help you, I'm going to do my thing. No. Esav takes the exception and says it's the rule. And that's why Yaakov works at getting the rights to the firstborn and the rights to the land of Israel away from Esav. And that's why if Yaakov's going to say, I'm going to deal in this world without Esav, then Yaakov has to show that he knows how to walk out of the Beis Medrash and he knows how to do Esav's task and he can handle both sides of the coin. And that's what Yaakov does. He outsmarts Esav. He brings the food to his father. He can play the game. If Esav until now was the one tricking his father, telling him all kinds of stories, And Yitzhak was convinced that Esav is so pious, now Yaakov's taking Esav's tools. Whereas Yaakov is a man of truth, Yaakov has to show, if you're going to take Esav's blessing, that means you can handle Esav's job in the world, you have to be able to use Esav's tools in the world. Ah, I'll show you I can. And that's what Yaakov does. He uses Esav's own tools. Until now, Esav's been tricking Yitzhak. Here, Yaakov can do it too.
But not only in terms of trickery and everything, but you look at just the functionality of life, of the world, is that, we are Jews, we have our neshamot and everything. We need to work on that, learn Torah, understand what we're doing or what our purpose is. But very often the means of doing that is that you can't deny the fact that we are also physical creatures. We also need to nourish ourselves. We also need to go out into the field, do the work, so that we can support that side of us which so crucially needs to progress spiritually also. So what I'm understanding is that before Esav made his tafkid, the soul tafkid, thus denying what Yaakov represented, that forced Yaakov, as you put it, disrupted the partnership. That forced Yaakov to then have to take upon himself both aspects of it into his one life.
Right.
Thus creating the proper balance, which then becomes the mission of life, so to speak.
Agreed.
In Messianic times, they say, we'll revert back to...
Maybe.
But the other thing, which is hard to understand, if Yaakov was doing the right thing, which I think Rivka really had, is the huge force there, from what I understand. But if Yaakov was doing that, how come he suffered so much from it?
Wait, good question.
Him and then with Yosef.
Good question. Good question. Let's see. Our sages say Leah and the stars, Leah was written out for Esav. She was supposed to be Esav's wife. How could it be such a pious woman was supposed to be Esav's wife? Leah is one of the matriarchs. What does that mean? In heaven it was written she was supposed to be his wife. Yeah, because there's a good side to Esav. Esav was supposed to develop that good side. Esav was supposed to be the representation of that secret that sometimes you got to do different than the Torah says. Sometimes the only way to keep Torah is through that. Uvachta shelo tipol begoralo shel Esav, haomer she'akol hu goral hu mikre. And Leah weeps and says, I don't want to fall in Esav's lot. And the key word here is the lot, because in Esav's mind, everything's a lottery. Nothing is the hand of God. It's all a question of luck. Let's see what I succeed in doing. That's why when Yaakov shows up before his father and his father says, how did this happen so quickly? And Yaakov says, God arranged it for me. Yitzchak is right away wary. That doesn't sound like Esav. Esav doesn't view the world that way. Esav is constantly viewing the world from a lottery perspective. It's a question of who wins the lottery? Or what's your luck? It's coincidental. So when Yaakov takes from Esav the responsibility, the capacity to fulfill his task, so then Leah is fitting for Yaakov, even at Bet Yisrael Mimena. And Yaakov is going to build the house of Israel with Leah. I can take questions, but then we won't finish the piece. That's the secret behind Yaakov marrying two sisters. And Amram marries his aunt. These are prohibited things in the Torah. Hagam shekimut kol haTorah kodem shenitna. We say they kept the whole Torah before it was given. Why'd they do that then? Keilu advarim baim mitzad kiyum haTorah b'tor horat sha'a. This is the idea that sometimes you say, in this hour we say a prophet can say, right now do this. But you're not allowed to do this, right? But now you are. That's the concept of horat sha'a. So long as he doesn't tell you to do idol worship, so long as he doesn't tell you this mitzvah no longer exists, he's just saying, right now, you're supposed to bring a sacrifice outside the temple. But I'm not allowed to write. On a one-time basis, he's allowed to tell you to do something like that. Lavor divrei Torah u'chidivrei ha-Tosfot, that's what Tosfos writes, shegamzeu mitzad ha-Torah lishmo al-Navi, lavor divrei Torah b'Torah ha-Tosfos says, that's part of listening to a prophet. That on a one-time basis, two conditions. He's not annihilating a mitzvah from the Torah on a long-term basis. On a one-time basis, he says to do something. And B, that act does not involve anything pagan. It's not antithetical to the basic concepts of Judaism. So then we have to listen to him. So this job of sometimes doing things that are antithetical to Torah, that was part of Esav's job, but Yaakov has it now. That's why he ends up marrying two sisters. Leah represents the idea that sometimes you have to do things in Esav's way, in ways that are not the way of Torah. Leah tricks him into marriage. Leah represents that, and Yaakov can't stand that. That's not Yaakov's nature. Yaakov says, that's an aspect of life. It's not my natural. That's not my job in life. That's where I have to take over Esav's job in life. Where Esav was supposed to represent that idea in the world, now I have to represent that idea. And Leah was supposed to be Esav's wife, now Leah's my wife. But it's not the natural connection. Rachel is the main connector to Yaakov. But Leah represents that secret.
That's how is Rachel the main connector to Yaakov? If, as we learned before, it's just also pretty known, that Leah really represents the connection to Hashem through tefillah, whereas...
That's another concept. Wait.
My question is, what is it exactly that Rachel represents, that she is the natural...
The same tmimut of Yaakov. Rachel represents a wholeness in the service of Hashem. Leah represents what the positive of Esav was supposed to represent, the exceptions to the rule.
What I don't understand is how Isaac couldn't know where that Esav saw life as a lottery and would still wish to bestow the blessings.
So we discussed that in Rav Harlap a week or two ago, that Yitzchak saw the negative of Esav, but saw the potential for positive.
You explained that, and that was fine. But there's only so much, you know, he thought that he could be turned around from looking at life as a lottery.
I don't know. I don't know which parts of Esav he saw and which he didn't.
It's hard to imagine growing up in that home. You could see somebody in weakness and give in. And when you're living as the one responsible to be the exception, that's dangerous work.
Yeah.
So I could see how, you know, I wouldn't want that task. I could see how it slipped. But yeah, I guess it's just figured. That's the Bechor. And that's it. I have faith in Hashem. And
maybe.
Turn around, maybe. I don't know.
Sorry. This is part of the secrets of the world. Our sages say about different things, Hashem says, this is part of my secret. Rabbi Akiva is part of my secret in the world. He says, what I'm discussing here are secrets of Torah that I'm not really supposed to reveal any more than I already have, so I'm not going to say any more. Meaning he's saying there's more to be said, and I'm not saying it. And when we understand this value, we understand how Israel is different than Chutz La'aretz. She'eretz Yisrael misod ora yashav. Eretz Yisrael represents a straight light. Da'inu kiyum ha-Torah befo'al. Living a life of Torah. Active performance of Torah. Ve'chutz La'aretz besod bitula shel Torah. Chutz La'aretz represents the idea that even when I have to do things in a convoluted way, I can also be fulfilling Torah. But that's the idea of Esav. That's why in Chutz La'aretz you can't attain prophecy the regular straight way. It's got to come in through a dream. That's the idea that in Chutz La'aretz we represent the exception, that sometimes you can't go the straight route. And that's the idea that Yaakov institutes the evening blessing. The Talmud says a dream comes through a shade. Our sages say there are two types of dreams. There's a dream that's not telling the truth. That's a dream that comes from a shade. The Talmud over there says a true dream comes from an angel. He says, we have a tradition that angels don't mention Hashem's name. Angels will not say Hashem's name outright. And the only way Yaakov can tap into true dreams is through his prayer of Arvit. And then he's going to be mentioning Hashem's name. He's going to bring himself to that level. And then he can have the dreams from angels who are not going to say Hashem's name. He's going to do his part. Don't ask me what that means. ולפי שחזון החלום מוכרח שיבוא מאור נעלם ונשגב מאוד שאיר בתוך המחשכים, ועל כן אחיזתנו באור הנעלם והנשגב הזה הוא אך במקצת, ועל כן הוא רק בתור רשות ולא חובה, שכל מה שלמעלה מהשגתנו הרי הוא רשות. He says, we say the evening prayer is רשות. Yaakov institutes a prayer, which our sages say is not as obligatory as any other prayer. That's because that prayer represents the Jew in exile. Our sages say in the evening prayer we say Amit ve'munah. In the evening prayer we speak about our faith, even though it's dark. The evening prayer represents a Jew in the darkness of exile. Well, a Jew in the darkness of exile has to be able to connect to a light that's going to penetrate the exile. That's the light of the land of Israel. Now that's something which is, you can't force a person to get to the highest level in the world. There are levels which he says are, it's up to you. You want to, you can do it, but it's not like you have to. That's the level which can attain that light, which comes, that can penetrate from Israel to here. And that's what Arvit represents. I'm going to go up beyond what I have to do. And so I'm going to tap into a light that's on a higher level than what I have to attain. And if I could add a twist to what Rav Chalap is saying, that perhaps is also the idea of Hanukkah, where generally in holidays we focus on the day, and in Hanukkah we focus on the night. And Hanukkah represents the Jew's desire to do more than he has to, because the Hasmoneans could have easily said, we don't have good oil, there's nothing we can do, and they kept looking. And then they found one flask, and they could have said, nope, one flask will only light one night. And yet they worked, and they prayed, and they found a way where Hashem saw how much they wanted to do it right, beyond the call of duty, because the call of duty was enough to say, God, we can't. It'll have to wait 8 days. We'll wait, and then the final day when we can start, if you have one flask, and you know in 8 days you can start, then you say, I'll wait, and on the seventh day I'll light, and on the eighth day I'll have pure oil, and I'll keep going. I light the menorah now? I'm asking you realistically, think about it. You have a house. You'll have electricity for one day. You have battery power for one day. So you'll say, I'll move in and I'll use that one day, the day before I have real power. I'm going to use it now and then spend the next 7 days in darkness. What am I doing? Why is now more better than then? No. But when I want to go as high as I can, and I know my call of duty doesn't obligate me to do it now, but I'm going to try. And the rest is up to Hashem. That's the idea of Hanukkah, that's the idea of Arvit, that's the idea of I want to attain a light where I don't have to. Davru b'midrash, in 1 minute, Amar Yaakov le'Leah, Ma ramiyaita? Yaakov says to Leah, how could you be so deceitful? Be'balayla v'akirina rachel v'atanit li. I call Rachel, and you answered me all night. Amra le, she said to him, it's far de let le talmidim. Is there a teacher without students? Lo kacha v'tzavach lachavuch Esav v'atanit lo. Didn't your father keep saying Esav, 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 and you answered him in order to get the blessings? So you see, for spirituality, you could trick someone. V'akavana ma'achar shalakachta kol chelikatosh be'esav mimin etzchani lipol b'chelikecha. Leah was telling him, you, in tricking your father, showed that you have Esav strength. That's why I am supposed to be your wife. You forgot that when you took Esav's lot in the task of the world, you also took his responsibility to take Leah as part of your house. And with that, Rav Chalap ends this idea of the dream of the ladder going